Hello.
Hello, Coach Roger Couture?
Yeah.
This is Michael Coker from Black College Nines. How are you?
Fine, how are you?
I'm all right. I'm calling because we're doing a podcast series from Black College Nines. We cover, as you're very well aware, we cover historically black college and university baseball. And
okay.
The reason of this is we're doing a series on the top coaches that we feel who has expanded HBCU baseball beyond its recognition.
Okay.
And the purpose of this is it's a series. And we thought that there was no other better person to start this off than legendary head baseball coach of Southern University. The man that has done more for HBCU than HBCU itself. How are you this afternoon?
I'm doing quite well.
I hope
there's a lot of glorifying you doing there.
Well, there's nobody covering HBCU. And back then it was Ruffin Bell had the Black College Nines, and we had picked it, and we had picked it up. And the thing about us is there's no other HBCU media coverage for historically black college baseball.
Right.
And so we feel that, and I'm taking a personal interest in this, and I'll tell you why. Because at the lower levels of HBCU baseball, there's no Major League Baseball scouts at the NAIAs, and there's a ton of talent.
Right. We were fortunate. Obviously, when I played at Southern in the 70s era, a lot of great, that's where all of the black players were at that time. So we were here. And then, so it was plenty of scouts, plenty of players. And then when I took over in 84, things had simmered a little, but you know what? It still had enough life when I got in it. And I made a commitment to try to do the very best and get the very best players. And without facilities and equipment, I was able to do it because I was not ashamed to ask people outside of the university for some things I didn't have. Okay? That's the thing that made the thing work, is that my contacts, the first one was Dusty Baker. When I took the job in August of 84, I had no equipment, no uniform, no field to practice on. Then I sat in the office stunned for a few seconds, and then I picked up the phone and called him. And he said, I tell you what, we're going to be coming to Atlanta. And in August of 84, and I met him there, my wife and I drove. And met him, and we got equipment from the Braves and the Giants at the time. And I got so much equipment, couldn't bring it back in the car. I had to UPS it back. That's how I started, because I asked, and then when I realized I didn't have a field to practice on, I had to figure out to get a feel. And I started asking questions. When I got questions answered, because they gave me direction. Once I got direction, I asked again. I partnered with the mayor of Baton Rouge, Tom Ed McKean. And he felt what I was asking for was deserving it. We went to the city, got the business community together. We got the field. We got license stands and everything. So we made that happen. And from one thing to another is that what I find out is that people are afraid to ask because they don't want to be told no. That hadn't been something, had been a hindrance for me. It's been one of my strengths in knowing that you should ask for what you don't have, as long as you don't ask the university you work for, because they're not going to give it to you. You got me?
Yes.
And that's what I did. I did not ask the university for a thing because I knew I wasn't going to get it.
I'm sorry. Wasn't the chancellor against that until you upset? I think you upset.
That was the chancellor. He's dead now, McClure. He was the chancellor, and he had said 2 weeks prior to that there would never be baseball on this university campus. And I sat in the meeting and I looked at him with a smirk on my face because he challenged me at that point. And when people back then challenged me, I reacted. And then I had already had the National Guard prepared to do the work for nothing. And when we upset, and it's God, all through my career, God has had a hand in this because I could not do it by myself. And I'm not going to be so cocky to think that I could do it by myself. You got me?
Yes.
You know, and that would be, a lot of people think it's them. But I looked at the spiritual connection that has put me there. He said that I truly believe that we were going to do it. We upset Cal State Fullerton. Upsetting Cal State Fullerton broke him down. I put the papers on his desk on that Monday. Said, would you kindly sign these? He signed it without ever looking up. So those are the kinds of things that has happened. Because a lot of other people would have given up. They would have been griping and fussing and saying, you're finding faults. You see what I'm saying? It would have been easy to find McClure, have fought with him. Not me. I never found fault when people denied me or got in my way. I found a way to get it to work. You see what I'm saying?
Yes.
And it all was done with my kids in mind. My kids have been the driving force, you see. I can go back to my growing up. There was someone there that did extraordinary things to help me, you see. And you have to give some of that stuff back. You got me?
Yes.
So I gave it back with effort, determination to make baseball what it is. And then by doing that in the 90s, we became one of the most powerful teams in all of Division I baseball. Forget about like baseball. I have information you showed that where we were ranked in the top 10 in many categories by Baseball America. We were ranked in the top 10 in win percentage and all kinds of stuff, you know. So if you go back to an article that they did, Baseball America did in the 90s, well, they did it in 2000. John Mayne and them did it, and they picked the top 10 programs in the whole country. Southern was down, many of them. So that's it. And I think what happened, we really got hit severely because of gender equity. And once we hadn't been able to recover, because there's been one thing after another since then, you know.
Well, going into your 31st season, what is different now compared to when you first got in?
32nd. It's the 32nd.
32nd, I'm sorry,
Coach. You hear me?
Yes, I'm sorry. I apologize. Well, what's the difference?
Well, people... Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
People get it mixed up all the time, so you're not out of the field.
Well, what's the difference between now and back when you first started? How is it? How do you mold your players now compared to back then?
Back then you could motivate kids, you could push them and challenge them. Them days are over with. Parents don't want you to motivate and challenge. They want little Johnny to have it easy. They want 72 degrees for little Johnny, and they don't want you to. In sports, sometimes you have to fuss and drive kids in order to succeed. But that's not what they want. Travel ball has hurt baseball more than anything. And if you want to ask me the most, that's what has hurt baseball more than anything. Travel ball. They pay an enormous amount of money to play on travel ball teams. Am I correct?
Yes, they do. And the kid is not guaranteed.
Kids that can't pay, kids that can't play, who pay, gets to play. They all have their travel bag, their bat, and helmet. And they're going to play. Even if they don't deserve to play, you got me?
Yes.
And that's what happened. Now it goes back into the high school. The coaches don't have a chance. The parents fuss. They go to administrators. Many administrators, many of them are weak, and they succumb to the parents, and it weakens the coach. Now it's getting into college to a small degree. where they think that the kid should play because he played on the travel ball team. And travel ball coaches fool them by taking their money and letting their kids play. Take 15 kids and everybody gets to play.
Well, one thing I noticed about that...
And everybody gets a trophy. And everyone gets a trophy, by the way.
Well, one thing I noticed about the travel ball is they sell these kids on the dream that they're going to be major league stars. And the reality is it doesn't happen.
That's right. You see, I'm on the Major League Diversity Committee. The Commission of Diversity Committee. And that's one of the things we talk about extensively is how travel ball has hurt baseball. And it's almost like a cancer. And, you know, the good travel ball teams all exist, but the bad ones, they would like to try and knock out because it's killing baseball.
It's true. And the issue is there was a kid from Edward Waters College, an HBCU NAIA program, who had 17 home runs and 71 RBIs. He had six major league scouts looking out for him. And he didn't get drafted this past season. And the one thing that bothered a lot of people was the fact that they said, well, nobody didn't see him play summer travel ball.
They keep saying that. They say that. That's not true.
And it was crushing
to
his.
That's not true.
Well, it was crushing to his mother because his mother said, you know, we didn't have the funds to send him to that. You know, if we would have known, we would have tried something.
I hear that from parents all the time, and I shake my head and laugh. I said, let me tell you something. I've got seven of my former coaches, players, who are scouts, and they're national cross-checkers. You know what a national cross-checker is, right?
Yes, I do.
I've got five of them, I think, are national cross-checkers. And I would like to people, I know as much about baseball. The thing that's annoying is not, it has nothing to do with who sees you. If you got ability and when they see you, they gonna take you, okay? I mean, that's really it, man. I mean, you know, I have a lot of kids who come to me and ask me, can you give me a chance, get talk to someone? I say, son, there's nothing I can do. They're looking at you. They see. They know all. And I say, the people who get drafted here, they think. I say, the people who get drafted here have ability. That's why six of my players are playing in the big league. They've had ability. You got me?
Yes.
You got to have ability. You know. And I had a kid drafted last year. You know. And then one other guy felt he should have been drafted because he hit more home runs than the kid was drafted. I said, let me tell you one thing. The kid who was drafted had a plus two. He was a 6-2 runner. In Major League Baseball, that's big right now.
Yes.
And he goes out and bat 350. So he hit 280 something here. He go play pro ball and bat 350. So they were correct with them. You got me?
Yes.
You know, so that's the way it is. It's really a difficult situation to make kids and parents understand about the draft. You know, it ain't for everyone.
Well, tell me this, Coach. You have two players. One got called up last summer by the San Francisco Giants. That was Cody Hall.
Cody Hall, yeah.
And then you have Jose De Leon, who's going to, hopefully, is going to be a part of the roster. And we'll know in the next few weeks once they call pitchers and catchers into camp. What do you think about De Leon? What is his chances?
Well, you know, I remember when I saw him in San Juan, Puerto Rico, as a 17-year-old, slinging the ball pretty good, you know. So I was very pleased with him. I said, "Doing this guy's got a chance," and I convinced his parents to send him to me. And what, he didn't have a good body, so he worked hard and went through him and got a good body. And the rest is history. He was throwing, and one of my former players ended up signing him. He saw him, and he was better than a 24-round draft choice because, you know, but people were afraid to sign him as a junior. And this kid pulled a gun on him, you know. And the rest is history. Now he was throwing 93, 94 here. He can get up to 97 now.
And they're looking at him. The fans are elated. They want to see him on the opening day roster.
Really?
Yes. I've read information that they're actually waiting that he gets called up when the pitchers and catchers report. And like I said, we'll know in the next few weeks.
They're going to be extremely happy with him. You know, hardworking kid, you know, and come from a good family. So, again, I've been fortunate to coach good kids, man.
Well, Cody Hall, I remember you tweeted how happy you were for Cody in September when he got called up when Major League Baseball expanded its roster to 40 players.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember you tweeted how elated you were about that.
Well, the reason was that Cody Hall became the first white kid from any historical black school in any of the three major sports to make it to the big leagues. He's the first one. And my university wouldn't write about it. They refused to do it. I couldn't believe it. I said, this kind of information, publicity. And they said, maybe he wasn't. I said, damn it, just look at the makeup of America. Immigration didn't happen until the 70s. And I said, the best white kids were never going there. You got me?
Right.
I mean, they wouldn't do it. They wouldn't write. So I had to beg people, and the newspaper wouldn't write it either because they were afraid that it was someone somewhere else that made it. I said, come on. You can write it and be proud to know that ain't never, he's the first one. You got me?
Yes. Well, it's good to see a player, especially from an institution like Southern, because we covered that. We wrote an article on him being called up. And then not only was he called up, he did a good job, and I think he's going to be a part of their roster this year.
Well, no, he got traded. You know, when San Francisco signed Denard Spain, they dropped him from the 40-man roster. He called him. And I called Dave Stewart over at Diamondbacks, asked him to look into it. I said, see if he can fit into what y'all doing. 2 days later, Diamondback traded for him, put him on the 40-man roster. That's a great story. You got me?
Yes.
That's a great story. You know, that my relationship with Dave Stewart got him, and I didn't ask him to sign him. I said, check with your scouting department, see if he can fit in. They thought he could fit in. They traded for him and put him on the 40-man roster. How about that?
See, that's what happens when you work, and I hope a lot of kids hear this. That's what happens when you work hard. Nothing in life is free, as you very well know that. You have to work for it.
Yeah, you have to work for it, especially at that level, you know. And my relationship with people, hold on one second.
That's okay.
The Cody Hall situation just shows that if you work hard and people have relationships, you can make things happen, you know.
Well, tell me about the Urban Invitational. This would be your ninth appearance.
Ninth? Man, it seemed like it started yesterday. Again, this thing started all because of a relationship. Jimmy Lee Solomon and I were at a seminar. I don't want to say seminar. Symposium. We were at a symposium in Richmond, Virginia. And the year, probably if this is the ninth year, so nine from 16 leaves what? 2005, maybe we were at a symposium in Richmond, Virginia, and we were talking about Major League, RBI, the baseball, and then I mentioned to him, we ought to try and put something together. He said, I like that plan. Let me try to throw it around and see. Well, it took a couple of years. A couple of years later, he called me and said, I got it. I got what I want. He said, can you make it happen? I said, yeah, tell me. He said, we going to take two black teams, take them to California, play at the Urban Academy over there. We'll play two white teams, predominantly white teams. I said, that's good. But he said, there's a catch. What is? He said, you got to deliver the band and the dancing dogs. I said, shit, that's easy. I delivered that, and that's how it became history. Well, and the band will perform Saturday in New Orleans, too.
Yes.
So that's how that started. Jimmy Lee Solomon. You know, it's, I tell you, again, people maybe think I'm crazy because I talk to everyone. I talk to everybody, and I've made a lot of stuff happen because I talk to people. And this is what we've been able to accomplish and do, get some of the things done. We have, because you got to talk to people. You don't know what they're thinking unless you talk to them. Well, so you can learn something from me by that, okay?
Well, how has the tournament exposed youth to HBCUs?
Well, you know, we've got, I think, 10 or 12 kids who played RBI ball or some other thing that MLB has put up. So a lot of kids are here because of what RBI and MLB have done. So I got to think it's exposed when you look at and Prairie View's got about 8 people on his team that's been in the RBI, came through the RBI program. Yeah, I would say something has happened. You know, I don't know about Alcorn and Grambling in the other school, but a lot of kids have come through the RBI program or some kind of other affiliate with MLB.
Well, Southern has one of the highest graduation rates in the SWAC.
Say that again?
Southern has one of the highest graduation rates for student athletes in the SWAC. What do you do as a coach? What do you tell your recruits?
Well, we try to sign kids who want to graduate. That's a huge thing. I mean, you know, who want a degree, and then you got to encourage them and motivate them and just stay with them. You know, it's challenging now because we all are being challenged more and more. But we've been fortunate to have a lot of kids who graduated. I can say that I have, and that's why I look at all those kids I have in the that doing stuff with Major League Baseball. I'm just so proud of it. And it happened at a moment when scouts, people were calling me, I made recommendation, and everybody was getting hired. And the thing is, they all did a good job. You know.
Well, how do you mold your players?
Well, we get them here and we put them in the system and just show them how to do things the right way. You know, that's basically what it is. We just show them how to do things the right way.
Well, Coach,
you'd be surprised how many kids have been taught to do things wrong. I mean, you'd be surprised.
Well, tell me. Let's talk about your book. A lot of people don't know that you did an autobiography of yourself and all of the years you were at Southern and everything that has happened at Southern.
I'm not going to say why if I can tell you off the record, but it's got to be off the record.
Well, let's scrap that then. I don't have a problem with that.
Did I tell you off the record?
Well,
and then I'll tell you. I mean, I happen to be know what I say to you can be off the record and then on the record. So when you're ready to be, I'll tell you more. But you know, I wrote the book. I'm very proud of writing the book. A lot of people have gotten a good knowledge. knowledge of who I am and how I came about. And it's been very informative. A lot of people have gotten it for their young kids, their son, daughters, to read. And I've gotten calls or texts or email from all over the world and telling me how great of motivation it is, how easy it is to read, that it flows so easy. And it tells a good story. It's, you know, it lets everybody know they can make it if they work hard. You got me?
Yes.
So, it's a, you know, the book, you know, the book will be more popular in another 5-10 years than it is now. And we've sold a lot of copies, you know, so, but I think it's got a chance to be even more popular down the road.
Well, Coach, tell me something. Who is the next Ricky Weeks?
Probably going to be a while before you get one like him. You don't get your hand on those kind of kids anymore. Major League Baseball, get them. And it's just going to take a unique parent like he had. His mother was unique. Valeria was unique. She made the decision for him to come here, and he followed her lead. And she trusted me. She believed in my word. But not more than my word, she believed my voice. Because after 2 conversations, she said, "It's something about you and your voice. And I want my son to be with you. I feel something about you." And this is an extremely spiritual woman. Maybe she's a preacher now, so I'm telling you. So she said it was something about me, and she was correct. Well, what made it so unique is that Ricky became the first player from any school like Southern to win the Golden Spikes Award. And it took me, without bragging, no other coach could have done it. You see, no other coach could have done it. You know, hold on one second. I'm going to do a TV interview. I'm sorry.
That's okay. Yeah, I'm still here.
I was telling by Ricky Weeks, and just think, you have to be able to be a dreamer, and I've always been a dreamer, that I could get Ricky Weeks. There have been a lot of players who's done what he's done with numbers and stats. You got me? And they didn't get a sniff. You got me?
Yes.
But it took me to call and talk to people and have them be negative with me and say, "How could you recommend a kid from a historical black school when y'all play inferior competition?" And I said, "Yeah, that's been the history." Never once getting angry. You see, had someone else heard that, they would have what? Hung up and not called back. You got me? I was that guy. I said, "You're right, but he's a different kind of guy." I said, "Don't worry about who he plays. Whenever he plays, everybody does good. He's special." Well, I made the call to get him on the USA team. Once he got on the USA team and did well, I made the call again to Baseball America, collegiate baseball, the big bookstores. They began to listen. The second call. You see what I'm saying?
Yes.
They began to listen, trust. And then he put up good numbers, and his name got out there, and then I kept calling. And John Manuel will tell you, I wore his ass out. He said, "We're going to do something on him." When I got that to do it, I got collegiate baseball to do it. And then a key call came in. A key call from a guy by the name of Bo Carter. You don't know who Bo Carter is. Bo Carter was an old white man that used to be the SID at Mississippi State in the 60s and 70s. That tells you something, doesn't it?
Yes.
Okay, he called me. He was the publicity director for the Big 12, or the whatever Big 12 down in Dallas. He said, Ricky Weeks. I said, "Yeah, Bo." He said, is he that good?" I said, "He's every good of it." He said, good. Let me tell you what. Keep your SID sending out the information, and we go help him out." Okay, well, Winston-Salem State now. Trust me, he stayed up countless hours every night. Said, Kevin, send this information out. Get it here. Send it there. And he listened to me and he did it. And the week before the Dick House Award was going to be given, I said, Kevin, look like Richie's going to win this. He said, Coach, you got to be kidding me. I'm telling you, I got a call from Bo. Bo Carter, he laughed. He said, Coach, Ricky won that thing by a landslide. Bo Carter called me on the day. Did your boy win? I said, boy, you know damn well he won. And I'm telling you, so I was the one guy who was willing to take the abuse, sort of like the Negro League players took the abuse for everybody else to follow. You got me?
Yes.
I took the negative talk that they were telling me about the conference, and Ricky Weeks won that son of a gun. He won every award that year in college baseball. But I'm telling you, it takes someone to, with a plow in front of you sometimes, that's going to let the water hit, the snow hit you in the face or the ice. You got me?
Yes.
Or the dirt. In order for the next guy don't have to deal with it. So that's how I've done things. You know, that's how I've done it.
Well, during this fall, during your fall ball schedule, you stated that you were looking forward to the 2017 season. Currently,
yeah,
with the talent,
because I knew that we had to go through some issues with NCAA, and that we were going to be young, and you know, we had to purge our roster last year who played for the championship, and we had to purge it and go in a different direction. And so I knew that it would take some time. And so that's right. I made this statement knowing that we had to look down the road, you know?
Well, do you see another SWAC championship? Maybe this season?
We're young. It'd be unfair to think that this group of young kids could do it. It's really because the conference is too good right now. You know, you got teams like Alabama State and Texas Southern all going. They're good. They're good. You know, Arkansas be good. I mean, you know, so it's just not going to happen overnight. You know, we've won a lot of championships. Trust me. I know. We won 14 of them with me coaching. So I know about championships. They're not easy to win, okay?
Yes, sir. Well, Coach, I appreciate the time we spent.
I know I ran my mouth, and I don't know if I answered some of the questions you needed.
You were fine, Coach. It was a nice, candid conversation with a legendary coach.
Well, I know a lot of people tell me that, but I don't look at myself as legendary. I'm just like anybody else, and a lot of people tell me that, but I'm not. You know, it keeps me grounded when I do things right. You know what I'm saying?
Well,
the accolades will come if you do good stuff, huh?
Yes, true. Well, because we're in a position that you're dealing with young kids, and when you mold a young kid, you're molding somebody that's going to be a decent person for life.
That's right. That's right. And I've got a bunch of decent ones out there. I know. They call me and say thanks. So that's the biggest thing I can get, you know? So... appreciate you, big guy.
That Coach, you'll be hearing from me. God bless you and God keep you, and have a successful 2016 season.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.